Hey, it's Brian Curtis from The Ringer, and I want to tell you about the Press Box podcast. The Press Box is a podcast for anybody who likes news, whether it's about sports or politics or pop culture, and wants to understand how that news really gets made. We have new shows every Monday and Thursday. We have long interviews with everyone from John Krakauer to Joe Buck. Your social media feeds are bursting with information every day. Let us help you sort it out. Join us on the Press Box.
This episode is brought to you by Vuori. I love sports. I know you do too. I also know that lots of you exercise, but if you're like me and my wife, the beloved sports gal, you're sick and tired of ugly, uncomfortable workout gear. Especially, you know, I do a lot of walking. I walk around LA. I make calls. I listen to podcasts. Here are two words that will change everything. Vuori clothing, a line of activewear that is unbelievable. The best thing about Vuori is you can lounge around in it. You can work out in it. You can go outside. You can go shopping down your local wherever. And you never feel like you're either underdressed or overdressed. You're just comfortable. You can wear it when you're training, traveling, lounging around the house. Go get yourself some of the most comfortable and versatile clothing on the planet. Here's the deal. Our listeners get 20% off their first purchase at Vuori.com/Simmons. Once again, Vuori.com/Simmons. This episode is brought to you by Atlassian. Atlassian software like Jira, Confluence, and Trello help power global collaboration for all teams so they can accomplish everything that's impossible alone. Because individually we're great, but together, we're so much better. Learn how to unleash the potential of your team at Atlassian.com. Atlassian.com. Atlassian. Tap the banner or visit this episode's page to learn more.
On today's episode of One Shining Podcast, we are talking elite execution, elite quotes, elite moments, elite storylines, and of course, the Elite Eight, myself and Kyle Mann. We're going to break it all down. We're going to talk about Connecticut and their historic dominance. It is at an all-time premium right now. We're going to talk about the Cinderella run continuing for NC State. We're going to talk about Clemson, Alabama. Kyle and I saw that in person, so we got some boots on the ground, some J's on the ground, whatever you want to call it, thoughts on that. And we also got Tennessee, Purdue, the Zach Edey game, and Zach Edey sent a message to the haters, to say the least. We'll talk about all that. Kyle, anything else before we get into today's episode?
Only that today was a good day for the good guys, Tate. I thought finally, we were wavering with the weekend and everything, but it's a good day for the good guys. So you got a great pot ahead of you guys that I'll just say is, but first,
Woody Durham.
He takes the timeout. Technical foul. Technical foul.
Welcome back to One Shining Podcast. It is Sunday, March 31st, and I am here with Kyle Mann, and we are reacting in real time. NC State just beat Duke to go to the Final Four for the first time since 1983. It officially feels like 1983 for all the NC State fans. We're going to get into all that. But first and foremost, Kyle Mann, the Elite Eight. Wow. Elite execution, elite quotes, elite basketball. It was a lot of fun.
Yeah, I was thinking, you know, this might be my favorite round. I really started thinking about it because you love the firefight. The bullets are flying. You're trying to make sense and keep track of everything going on. Like you were saying, sensory overload, more just opening the fire hose of basketball and just drowning you in it. And it's like, that's fun. And I gave you the update the next round. And I was like, it's a little nicer to focus. I think the regional final is my favorite because we're not in domes yet. The dome transition is big, as we know. It's a vibe shift. We're going to be going to Phoenix and seeing it in person. I've never seen the Final Four in person before. That's going to be fun for me. But I like the regional finals because the stakes are high. It's in a smaller arena. And we get more of the game. So, yeah, I love these regional finals. They were all competitive and interesting. Spare one, which we'll talk about in a second. But, yeah, I had a hell of a time today, Tate. Hell of a time.
It was a great day for basketball. Brian Curtis, Press Box's very own, said this is one of the greatest halves of college basketball he's ever enjoyed, talking about the NC State run in that second half. I think America kind of fell in love with DJ Burns in real time if they didn't already love him already. He is America's teddy bear. Again, we're going to talk about that little cleanup duty here. Every tournament since 2013 has had a five seed or worse make the Final Four. We obviously have NC State as the 11 seed. They are the Cinderella. We have a Cinderella wearing the slipper in the Final Four, and we're going to get my dream matchup. I said before the tournament, I wanted DJ Burns versus Zach Edey. We're going to get that in real time in Phoenix in front of us. So I'm very excited about that. Let's talk about history. Let's talk about dominance. Let's talk about Dan Hurley and the UConn Huskies. Let's start there. This game was tied 23-23. It looked like it could be a game. You and I forecasted a little bit, talked about how Illinois could maybe give them some trouble. Brad Underwood said, quote, if he blocks 100, he blocks 100. I think Donovan Klingon should take a picture with the Wilt Chamberlain 100 sign after this, because from there, it was elite execution as Donovan Klingon protected at the highest level. What did you see here, and what did you think of Kling Kong in real time?
Oh my God. Like you said, at 127 to go in the first half, it was 23-23. And yeah, at 12:49 in the second half, it was 53-23. So, you know, that escalated quickly. I think that joke was made on the broadcast. It slid down the hill, man. And I think the flow of this game was interesting because you came out, I don't even think it was that like Connecticut was just playing crazy well. I mean, it's not like they were like lighting it on fire from three in this game. They were just doing what they do. And Clark Kellogg has talked about this a lot, that they just have a standard that they have a cruising altitude that you're going to have to elevate to, because they're not going to beat themselves. They run their stuff really well. It's not like one person just kind of breaking you down, busting you down. I saw Nicholas Batum had the tweet that this should be taught to young players. Like, this was just basic, sophisticated execution. But you could see Illinois in the beginning of the game. Tell me if you agree with that. I think there was just an initial like, holy shit. Like, I feel like they had kind of like an airport test moment where they were like, whoa. Or, you know, did you ever play anybody in high school where like you could just kind of hear the crowd reacting to the opposing team dunking and layup lines or whatever it was? And I feel like Illinois kind of had to get their legs under them a little bit, like, because initially they looked shell-shocked by UConn. Like, they didn't know where to attack initially.
Yeah, and the size of UConn, I think, really threw them for a loop. We talked about Marcus Damas being able to play and back guys down, you know, like Barkley does down to the post. But when you're backing down a guy that's 6'7", like Tristan Newton, it's not going to work the same. When you're backing down a guy that's 6'10", like Alex Caravan, it's not going to work the same. So, like, this safety valve that they kind of had offensively gets taken away from them. And then, like you said, it just felt like they were trying to find spots and pick their spots, but they kept getting funneled into Klingon. And every time they get funneled into Klingon, it was a problem. And when you go on a 30-0 run, I mean, what else can you say? Evan Miyakawa, he has the 10-0 kill shots. This was a triple kill shot. The last time that we had this in college basketball was 2020. So it's been 3 years since we've seen anything like this in college basketball. That's regular season. That's postseason. That's everything. And this happens in the Elite Eight. So that's just, we're talking about that level of execution from UConn. Dan Hurley had an elite quote after this game. He said, when your defense is elite, which ours is, and your offense is elite, which ours is, we're not flawed in any particular way. That makes you bulletproof as possible. They look bulletproof. And we've talked about them dominating. We've talked about, can anyone press this team? Can anyone get them to a position where they look like they're flawed? And they're not even shooting the ball well. 28% from three in the NCAA tournament, 25 for 89. So they're not even playing the fully formed version of UConn basketball, but they're still dominating. And right now, it just doesn't seem like there is an answer. Apparently, Larry David yelled out from the crowd, change your strategy to Illinois. They did not change their strategy, and it did not work out well in the end.
Let's talk about strategy a little bit here. I would differ a little bit from you with like Damask in that, like, I thought he did a decent job with Newton. Like,
early
once they
did.
Settled down, right. Yeah, I was like, I thought that was an area where they had an advantage, because I thought Damask kind of had Tristan Newton in jail a little bit with his pace and with his strength. He had the little lefty going. He hit some open jumpers. They settled down. We'll talk a little bit about Shannon here quickly, but like, I understand what Underwood is saying. Like, you want to attack Klingon. You don't want to run away from him. But going at him for going at him's sake, I thought was a little foolish. Like, if you get the opportunity, yes. But there's a thing that happens with college basketball games sometimes or all basketball games, where you can pull yourself out of the flow of what you like to do because you fixate on something that you think could be an area of vulnerability. Well, it wasn't. And, like, also, the fact that they're fronting Klingon with a 6'10 guy to start the game, like, not going to happen, guys. Like, they're good entry passers. But you watch UConn, man, and what they like to do, you know, some teams some teams have kind of like siloed strengths. Like you have one strong area. UConn just kind of chips away at you. You know, they're not all post. They're not all pick and roll. They're not all off screen. They're not all whatever it is. But they do all of those things kind of well in sequences at times. And that's what wears you out. And that's what's so tough. Because you didn't look at anybody in this game and think like, oh, man, they can't stop Castle. Oh, man, they can't stop DR. They can't stop, you know, Newton. They just sort of chipped away at them. And I think the other thing, too, is just Terrence Shannon. Like, what do you think about Terrence Shannon, man?
It was not good. It was not a good game. It was a good game for someone if you were a basketball purist and you think that passing the ball, moving the ball, cutting without the ball is how basketball is supposed to work. It was not a good day if you like the isolation, dribble the air out of the ball, watch one guy do his thing, watch one guy get in his bag, as we like to say these days. So that was like the contrast of both these styles. And I think mentally, UConn just wore on Illinois. I mean, they were in the danger zone, the danger zone early here. They put him into the game. They were hoping that he could offer some sort of defensive prowess against Donovan Clingan, but every kind of button that he pushed, Brad Underwood, it just felt like it didn't work. And then after the game, I found his post game, you know, pretty illuminating. He said that they discussed spacing out Clingan ad nauseum before the game. You know, he said that was one of the focal points. They wanted to space him out. They wanted to play lineups that took threes that got him out of the paint. I just didn't feel like we saw that much in the game. You know what I mean? Despite it being talked about ad nauseum, I didn't see it actually on the court. So like the post game didn't really reflect what we saw on the floor. And I think that would have been the real test. I mean, I always go back to Laettner versus Shaq, right? Laettner just hit threes, pulled him out away from the basket. Shaq has 12 points in that game. Going in, everyone says Shaq's going to dominate Laettner. Shaq's going to dominate Laettner. And it goes the opposite direction. In this game, Illinois, I guess, they didn't feel like their personnel defensively could hold up based on the group that they could put out there to basically stretch him out. But I didn't see it enough. And I think that was the one thing, not to, I know you asked about Shannon, but just generally speaking, the offensive philosophy felt a little bit flawed.
Yeah, Shannon to me just looked out of control. Yeah, like the philosophy, I agree. Like, I think it's equal parts. I think Illinois squandered a lot of chances to stay in this game. Like we said, it needed to be a perfect script. But, you know, Guerrier looked shook to me. There were a couple times where it was very clear, like he had a wide open three, didn't take it, drove, turn it over. Just the you know, Klingon's presence is just like an optical tractor beam, basically, not to be too jargony there, but like he sucks up your attention, and you could tell that he bothered them. Let's do a couple like playing well lately, didn't play well tonight stats here. Illinois lately, last five games, 54% from two. In this game, 25% from two. Lately, 46.2% from two. In this game, 25.4. Paint points, this is a big one, 34.8 in their last five, 20 paint points in this game. Overall, you know, they've been, you know, defending better. UConn just feels like a steamroller, and it kind of becomes a question now of just like, if not them, then who? Like, you know, we were like, you and I had that conversation before the tournament where we're like, well, who hypothetically could get them? And the list was short. How many did we rattle off? We were like, UNC, Purdue, I don't know. It was fewer than five, wasn't it, I think?
Yeah, and I think right now there's probably one, you know what I mean, barring some sort of perfect game, right? I mean, NC State would have to play a perfect game against UConn and have some sort of magic that they've been wielding for quite some time. Alabama, the same sort of deal. You need a Jaren Stevenson, Grant Nelson, everybody to have those miraculous games that they had in this West Regional for them to really have a shot. So Purdue was probably one of those four or five teams. They're at least still in the tournament, but what UConn's been able to do, I mean, they have the record right now. They've won 14 straight games, the longest win streak in Sweet 16 or later since 1975 when the Sweet 16 began. So, I mean, we're looking at history, and you can find all these different benchmarks to kind of, you know, qualify the history that we have in front of us. But your eyes are telling you what's happening. I mean, they're blowing people out. They don't really look fazed by anybody. And Dan Hurley, after the game, I mean, some of these quotes are just, I mean, they're hilarious. I mean, he said, quote, our fan base is obnoxious as shit and everyone hates us. You know what I mean? It's like he's like pulling self-aware Dan Hurley on us. You know, got Hassan Diarra, you know, who's been a nice spark plug for UConn. Afterwards, he said, I'm a professional cutting neck guy. If you need to cut a neck, call me. Like this UConn team, they seem like they're having fun. You know what I mean? Like they don't seem like the pressure of being this good is getting to them yet. And that, I think, is the most fascinating part. And they're also sickos. They're superstitious sickos. They have a shoe that is on like one of the bastions of one of the baskets there that they haven't moved for 2 years. And Dan Hurley said they won't move the shoe because the shoe is lucky. You had this whole story about Caravan and Cam Spencer. One of the first times when they were roommates at the hotel, Caravan closed the door without leaving it open for him. And Cam Spencer yelled at him. So now they recreate this moment every time they're on the road at a hotel with each other.
So much. I love it like, so much.
Like, I'm like an these obsessive, guys are sickos.
I'm an obsessive mojo recreator. I laugh at that commercial where the dude smacks the popcorn. It didn't quite reach my top five, but yeah, I love it, man. I mean, there was a point early in the game where Damascus was starting to play well, and Cam Spencer, go back and watch this. Cam Spencer walks well out of his way to just go shoulder bump Marcus Damascus for no reason. He just went over there and did it. So yeah, it was sad. You could kind of see Illinois just get demoralized in this game. I'm kind of curious to see, you're talking about drawing him out. I mean, I'm curious about Grant Nelson attacking Klingon because he's probably the best ball handling heavy quotes five. You know, he's 6'10", 6'11". Is he probably the best ball handling five that will have a chance to do it? Burns doesn't really face up an attack like that. He's more, you know, I don't know. That's one X factor that I think could be interesting, you know.
Yeah, I agree. I just think UConn, we could just talk ad nauseum, to use a Brad Underwood term here, about how great they are. But I mean, you really can't put into words how great they've been, especially on this 2 year run. And if they do go back and win a national championship, we're talking all time history here with Dan Hurley. Dan Hurley, all those superstitions, I have nothing but respect. I mean, you and I, we're college basketball guys at heart. We're blue bloods. We understand. You go where you go. You do what you do, whatever it takes. The man has dragon underwear. The man has to get his suit washed, all this sort of stuff. I mean, he does everything to the max, but they are prepared. They have a great staff. What Luke Murray's been able to do, Kamani Young, I mean, like they have a great group around them and a great team that buys into it and buys into the identity of their coach. And I just don't see the wheels really coming off. And this Illinois game was confirmation bias of that truth because I like the talent of Illinois. And I really thought they could give them a game. And they did for a little bit. Like we said, it was 23-23. Could go one way or the other. I didn't expect it to go in a 30 run. I mean, that was just insane. So
they just fell apart, you know. And I'd be swaggy too if I just, you know, earned the love of my father. That's what the love of your father will do for you. I just love that CBS thing. I love how vulnerable Hurley is, man. He can range from corny to crazy, but that was great. Just how honest he was in that interview. I'm kidding, obviously, about that. But like, and then the other thing here, too, is that, like, we'll talk about it in the offseason, I'm sure, maybe. But, like, I wouldn't be surprised if people start coming after Luke Murray for head jobs. So put a pin in that for later. But, yeah. So
I think so. Why not? I mean, this is a staff. I understand why that staff wants to stay together while they had, you know, these pieces that are here and they can go make a historic run. But after this year, if they win the national championship again, there's going to be a lot of people calling. One last thing on this game I did want to point out. Brad Underwood in his post game, he said, "I might be the most blessed man in college basketball." It was a nice, like, moment. And Illinois getting to the Elite Eight for the first time since 2005, that was a mark that they kind of needed to get through. They needed to break through that glass ceiling for the program. So it was good for Illinois. I didn't want to leave that game with all bad taste in the mouth of Illinois basketball fans, because I think they're moving in the right direction. Brad Underwood was a little bit feisty when reporters were asking him about the ceiling of the program and things like that. But I thought it was good all in all. Shout out to Coach Underwood, and shout out to the UConn Huskies going to the Final Four. We're going to see him in Phoenix. Dan Hurley is very excited about it. He said, "We got screwed going to Brooklyn. We got screwed going to Boston. And now we got to get on a plane and fly to Phoenix." He will always find some way to find some fire. And that's what we love about Coach Hurley. The second game of the day, let's talk about Clemson, Alabama. Kyle Crichton and I, we were in the building for this one. Clemson, Alabama, two football schools perennially. The fan bases, by the way, hate each other. That was one thing that was nice. They were very familiar with each other, and they had a lot of Yeah, they have a lot of animosity for each other. So in this game, it was a great atmosphere because of that sort of backdrop with both these programs knowing each other so well, trying to take that step in the basketball direction, trying to get to their first Final Four for both programs. But this turned into the Jaren Stevenson game, the corner three assassin, 19 points in this game. He had two air balls, but otherwise, he was the ultimate X factor. Grant Nelson had two fouls before the under 16 timeout. PJ Hall fouls out in this game. But every single time Clemson clawed back to try to make it a game, Alabama had an answer, and the man who had that answer was Mark Sears. And at one point he hit a three, he ran back down the court and he said, "I really do this. No, I really do this." And it was worth being courtside to see him kind of have that moment in real time. What did you see from Alabama, and what'd you like in this game?
Well, yes, Stevenson actually missed a couple layups early in the game too, but it was an interesting inversion of styles. Again, Clemson playing out of the inside. A lot of teams left in this tournament were playing inside out. So, Mike Woodson, maybe not as dumb as some people were kind of making him sound, or they were acting like. But overall, yeah, Sears was loose. I was just really shocked. I was really shocked at how loose Bama played throughout this game. And they made every big shot throughout the game. It's a shame that we're not going to be able to see Shefflin's how sweaty can he get for the first TV timeout. I told you guys the other night, they had a nice close-up of him at the tip-off the other day, and he had already, sweat through his shorts. Impressive stuff from Shefflin. It's a shame that we didn't get to see them move on. But Alabama has the variance. I think it's probably better for them that they moved on, because I think they have the stylistic kind of variance to spread UConn out and make them feel the pressure. You know, at what point do you feel it conversation, Tate? We haven't talked about that during this tournament. At what point do you feel it? I'll be interested to see if Alabama can put together a crazy output from three in this game against UConn to make them feel it, feel some pressure.
Yeah, finally, maybe officially we could see them have some pressure, but Dan Hurley said he doesn't like close games. That's why they blow them out. I do want to talk about kind of late in this game. Clemson threw a junk defense out there. They throw it, I think it was a 3-2 zone. It was kind of like a matchup zone, but it looked basically the bare bones of a 3-2 zone. First couple possessions, it worked, and Alabama looked like they were a little bit throttled by it. Clemson continues to hang around in this game. Ian Shefflin had some big moments. Like you said, sweating so much, a different shade of orange was his Clemson jersey, but that was good to see. But they have their little moments back and forth. But then Mark Sears had two moments against that zone that really kind of sealed this game. He had an and-one. First he had a corner three against the zone, which was like a nice kind of read in real time, where he just cuts to the corner into the open space, gets the extra pass, hits the corner three. Then he gets an and-one opportunity again. And these are coming on the back of Joe Girard having two huge threes himself, where he was making great reads on how they were trying to defend him and basically just reacting in real time and getting open. But Mark Sears being able to do that in those moments, his mom's in the crowd recreating these moments that are happening in real time. So if you needed to highlight reel or you needed a replay, you could turn around and watch his mom do it in real time. But when that happened, I said to myself, oh, this Alabama team, they're working at a different level. You know what I mean? And it is kind of interesting. They are a perfect example of the portal world that we live in. Mark Sears was a guard at Ohio, playing behind Jason Preston, playing with Ben Vanderplas, playing for Jeff Bowles, a really good Ohio team. They were actually the last team to do that 30-0 run kill shot was Ohio in 2020 with Mark Sears. So a little connective tissue between these two games that were happening in real time. So to have a guy who's an Ohio guard there, to have Estrada who came from Hofstra there, to have Grant Nelson, the Dakota Durant, right? There's all these guys that have come from small programs that have been brought in by Nate Oates. Nate Oates was a high school coach, 11 years ago. And now he's coaching these guys that were low major, mid major, whatever you want to call it. Now they're at a high major program and they're making a run to the Final Four. And Mark Sears is the leader of this team. I got a little funny story to tell you, by the way. In Alabama, the SID came over and told me he had listened to our show breaking down the Carolina-Alabama game. And he said that, we were on top of the coverage on Cadeau and Trimble. He said they almost changed the coverage at halftime. And Mark Sears was one of the most vocal ones to say, we can't change the coverage, right? And during this game, there were a lot of moments where Nate Oates was trying something, tinkering with something. Mark Sears didn't want to get taken out of the game at one point. It was like a conversation, a dialogue between a point guard and a coach that was very old school. I had a lot of respect in the moment for Mark Sears. And I think he was the MOP of this region, to say the least.
Yeah, the play that you were talking about, I think that was a really pretty action, the one where he relocated to the, it was almost like a role replace effectively where,
right.
I forget who came to the top, but he, and they just replaced each other. And basically you saw the attention go to one side and then go to the other. And they have a lot of clever movement like that in their offense. So I definitely think they're going to make them guard. They're going to force Connecticut to guard them in a way that maybe they haven't been tested. I'm trying to think of the other opponents in this tournament. And I don't think that we've seen anything quite like this. So I'm really excited about that game. Yeah, very, very excited. And it's cool to see. It was cool to see Big Shot Bob in the arena. I don't know if you got a selfie with him, but I saw you and Kevin obscured on the television set. You were both laughing a lot. I didn't know if you guys were intentionally trying to look like young men in the prime of your lives, just like having such a fun time. Because there was no like deer in headlight look from you guys. Like, oh shit, we're on TV. You were just boisterously laughing, and I had some FOMO as a result. Was Kyle just off out of frame?
He was just to our left, and he was sitting right next to like a true blue beat reporter, Big J, eating a pretzel on Media Row. It was honestly that's a lot of the laugh. The laughter was coming from me watching Kyle exist in this media environment. He had a Harley Davidson shirt on. He was eating a pretzel. A lot of Big J's around. And also we had Brian Anderson in front of us. Shout out to Brian Anderson. Great play-by-play guy. But he was joking around with us. He was telling KOC to stop picking his nose and things. You know what I mean? Like one of just like those, just about ribbing time, right? The guys behind you. Yeah, it was nice. It was a lot of fun. We missed you there. But the West Regional was the story of Alabama. It was the story of Nate Oates, the story of a math teacher, high school coach that turns into a guy that takes Alabama to their first Final Four. Oh, yeah, there was one other good moment I forgot to mention. Allie LaForce during the Masters promo doing the golf swing. That was a nice little cutaway moment that we saw it in real time in the arena, and then I watched it back on the broadcast. So shout out to Allie LaForce. But great first two games there on Saturday. Alabama punches their ticket. UConn punches their ticket. They'll both be in Phoenix. And people forget, this is the people forget of the day. Danny Hurley was the head coach of St. Benedict's Prep from 2001 to 2010. Nate Oates was the head coach at Romulus High School in Detroit from 2002 to 2013. I say that now because you're going to hear it a whole lot more leading into the Final Four and leading into this matchup. They were once high school coaches, and now they're coaching at the highest level.
Yeah. And this is something that I've complained about a little bit, is like when you're talking about like potential coaches, people like don't thumb your nose at somebody that maybe doesn't have Division I, especially now in this era where like people are like the extinction rate is quick among dinosaurs who don't want to adjust to the way things are now. So don't thumb your nose. And we already had like we already had proof of this from the past of like, of course, Nate Oates proved himself at Buffalo. These guys are proven, and Dan Hurley did too. But you know, Bo Ryan was a guy who didn't, you know, he came from a lower level. Was he Division II or Division III? I think he was III. Well, even Bruce Weber or Bruce Pearl. Yeah. I mean, so don't thumb your nose, you know, coach there's brilliant, you know, coaching talent. Doesn't necessarily have to mean that you are like a pedigree in the family type that raises the ranks and you're a known commodity, a known name. Great ideas come from all over the place. And it's cool to see, you know, good coaches get a chance and succeed. Yeah.
And these coaching clinics that they have, like Matt Painter goes down to a coaching clinic, has a high school coach tell him about a drill, 3-point shooting drill that he does. And we talked about it on the last show. And now he's been running that drill the entire year. And they're the best 3-point shooting team in the country. So good coaches take from other good coaches, no matter what level. It could be your local middle school, you know, your church league team, whatever it is. If a coach sees good action or a good drill or whatever it is, they'll use it because they don't have an ego about it. And that's what the best coaches do. So shout out to both those guys. Again, you're going to hear that nugget a lot. So I just wanted to go ahead and say people do forget this.
This episode is brought to you by Vuori. I love sports. I know you do too. I also know that lots of you exercise, but if you're like me and my wife, the beloved sports gal, you're sick and tired of ugly, uncomfortable workout gear, especially, you know, I do a lot of walking. I walk around LA, I make calls, I listen to podcasts. Here are two words that will change everything. Vuori Clothing, a line of activewear that is unbelievable. The best thing about Vuori is you can lounge around in it. You can work out in it. You can go outside. You can go shopping down your local, wherever. And you never feel like you're either underdressed or overdressed. You're just comfortable. You can wear it when you're training, traveling, lounging around the house. Go get yourself some of the most comfortable and versatile clothing on the planet. Here's the deal. Our listeners get 20% off their first purchase at Vuori.com/Simmons. Once again, Vuori.com/Simmons. This episode is brought to you by Jiffy Lube. Cars can be a big investment, so it's important to take care of them. I once got a car that I started out with 25,000 miles on, I got it to over 200,000 miles because I took care of it. You know how you take care of a car? You take care of the maintenance, the oil, the brakes, all that stuff. And if you don't, you can have a car just completely fall apart. When your car needs maintenance, head to Jiffy Lube. They provide automotive excellence at speed. Get your oil changed, brakes checked, tons of other multi-care services. It's all done by expertly trained technicians who actually care about taking care of you and your car. Jiffy Lube, car more. To find coupons and start an instant online estimate, visit JiffyLube.com.
On May 10th, Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes is coming to IMAX and theaters everywhere.
What a wonderful day!
This summer, one movie event will reign.
It is our time.
They stole my village.
I know where they're taking your clan.
Bend for your king.
Never.
Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes. Only in theaters May 10. Tickets on sale now. Rated PG-13. Some material may be inappropriate for children under 13.
Let's talk about the Sunday games. The first one was a showdown. Rick Barnes taking on Matt Painter. Both guys trying to get over the hump. Rick Barnes trying to get to his first Final Four since TJ Ford went to the Final Four, which was a nice little, you know, cutaway there, a nice little connection between the TJ Ford commercial that they got going on with Carmelo and Kendrick Perkins. So that Mello, gave me hope that
you give horrible advice. Yeah.
Great acting by Kendrick Perkins. My
just,
God.
Just mail him the Oscar now.
Yeah. TJ Ford, no lines for you, even though you are a Final Four.
Smile. Like, yeah. Just smile, right? and look jovial over there. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, we needed more from TJ Ford, and we needed more from Tennessee in this game because this was Purdue's day. It was Purdue's time, and talking about elite actions and elite players and elite moments, Edie's rim pressure and his ref pressure, they are both elite. That is what I learned in this game, and a lot of people are upset about it. We'll talk about some of the Edie after the game stuff, but this was a showdown between two men. It was two stars going at it back and forth. Anything you can do, I can do better. Dalton Connect versus Zach Edie. Let's start with Connect because he was incredible in this game. He really was. He did all he could to get Rick Barnes over the hump and get Tennessee a win, but it just wasn't quite enough today. What did you see from Connect?
We talked about this after the last Purdue game where, you know, we were talking about how Purdue lures you into shooting those shots where they're basically like foam booth mid-range shots where, mm-hmm. you know, they're trailing you tightly. And they're motivated to trail like that because, you know, you're taking that weird shot in the mid-range. And the thing is, like, Tennessee kind of took the bait, man. Like, throughout this game, there were a few that I thought didn't go down surprisingly as well as Connect played. And I was telling you early on in the game, I could tell that they were like kind of daring him to take that shot, daring him to be a playmaker, having him play, you know, in traffic. The problem for Tennessee, man, is they just couldn't keep the plants watered long enough. You know, like mm-hmm. the league got up to 32-21 at 5:12 in the first half. And that was purely Connect fuel. I mean, he got hot and he was like the only sort of like positive difference maker for them. You know, Zakai Ziegler goes 3-for-12 from the field. You didn't get much from Josiah Jordan James. Yeah, you know, Adu didn't really do a whole lot. Meshack didn't do a whole lot. Vescovi obviously had a weird year anyway, but he was sick, mm-hmm. so he wasn't a factor. They needed more. If they were going to pull this off, it was going to have to be a group effort. And, you know, Connect did his best. You saw some of his sort of like playmaking abilities stressed at times, but, you know, Purdue just kind of methodically wore them down. That was my takeaway. They just needed to get more from other guys, and they just couldn't do it.
Yeah, and Rick Barnes was trying his best to get this game out of the half court, and Matt Painter was trying his best to get this game into the half court. And I felt like that kind of give and take in this game was really the friction that was created. And Dalton Connect hit two big threes back to back. They take an 11-point lead with about 6 minutes to go in the first half. And, you know, you and I, we're texting each other. We're saying to ourselves, okay, this is Tennessee, right? They got it kind of figured out. They got Purdue on their heels a little bit. Purdue's going to have to force some things. And then it was Fletcher Lawyer and Zach Edey, like a two-man game type situation. They go on a self 12-0 run to give themselves a lead. And then from there, once they kind of responded to that punch from Connect and from Tennessee, it was Purdue's game from there. And, you know, Tennessee did their best to try to fight back into this game. There were some live ball turnovers that Lance Jones had a bad one for a Connect breakaway dunk there. But a 15-2 run to end the half. They're up by two at the half. They come into the second half. Gainey hit a couple of threes to help Tennessee to alleviate some of the pressure that was on Dalton Connect. But from there, it really was like there was a stat that came up at one point. It was 31 points Edie had, 31 points Connect had, and the others on both teams had 27 points. And we had a tie game. Like it was that sort of symmetry between the two stars, which was really cool to see. Groover is not a great official. He was calling this game. There's a lot of people that have a lot of thoughts on Groover. So if you're one of the people that hadn't seen Edie as much and you're pointing to the officiating, he's one of those guys that you maybe learned his name today. But what were your thoughts on Edie and how he was officiated? Let's talk about that because that is a big topic of conversation.
You mean Foul Ming? That was I saw that on Twitter. That's a shame.
Pretty good.
I didn't make that one up. It's clever. You know, not as good as Lou Valcinder, but I digress. Edie, it's tough because this game was physical. I thought the baseline of what they were allowing, I thought on the perimeter, I thought Tennessee probably got the advantage. There were some loose ball situations where I thought Tennessee was playing a little rough and they got away with it. And on
and
the
that's
interior,
their game, by the way.
Yeah,
you know what I mean?
That's
how they play. Yeah, right. Yeah. So, I mean, it's not shocking to see, you know, Tennessee be physical. That's who they are.
This is just what they do. But, you know, and on the interior, there were some moments where I was like, it just felt inevitable because there was one play, and you could point to a bunch of different plays, but there was a play where Edie sometimes gets away with two things, I will say. I know I've pissed Purdue fans off lately because I didn't have time to go up and see Purdue on my road trip. It was purely a scheduling thing, Purdue fans. It didn't mean anything by it. I'm sorry. It made a lot of people.
West Lafayette's nice, by the way.
I love
Mackey Arena. It's a nice place, nice people, nice setup. It's nothing personal. I know that.
I got some griping DMs, Tate. Anyway, I just wanted to address that really quickly.
A lot of griping.
Just pipe down. I'm a nice guy. Unless you sweat through your clothes, I won't comment about it. Then I'm not as nice. So, yeah, he gets away with, like, he'll do that thing sometimes where he'll just sort of, like, ride your back slowly. And because he's so big, it's not. There were some times where if I were the Tennessee players, I would have sold the contact a little bit more. Like Awaka was like, Edie bumped into him. I texted you this. When he bumps into you the third time, if you know it's coming, it's not going to be that hard to sell. We saw Middlebrooks against Filipowski anticipate when it was coming, and they just didn't really do that. And then, you know, he gets away with that a little bit sometimes, and then sometimes he'll get away with, like, arm barring sometimes. And I don't know how it doesn't get called. It's really weird. There was one play where he arm barred. I don't know if it was a walk or who it was. And then I think Adu came in and blocked his shot cleanly, and it was on the rim. And Edie got free throws out of it. But he's a hard person to officiate because different body types demonstrate contact differently. We've seen this with Shaq. If you hit Shaq over the head with a chair, he might not move at all. If you hit me over right. the chair, I'll fall down. Like, some body types just demonstrate it differently. So he's tough for that. But overall, man, I mean, he gets to his spots and you can't dismiss the fact that he's just so effective. Like, Lapis has been just yapping about that left shoulder baby hook, and it just goes in, man. And, like, I think it is really interesting. You and I talked about this earlier in the season about there are parallels to the way people talked about defending Kareem's skyhook, where, you know, they were like, you can't let him go at, like, a parallel line to the sideline. You can't let him go straight, because if you do, he shoots like 70% on this. Somebody should go track this. But if you can get him angling towards the free throw line, the percentage goes down. But the challenge is, dude, how the hell do you do that? Because he's so heavy. And he deserves the credit. He hit free throws in this game. I saw Gene Katie tell him to follow through at one point. That was pretty funny. Shouts to Gene Katie and his hair. And it was good for Purdue, man. There was you could see the catharsis on their faces,
yes.
on Matt Painter's family's face. It was nice to see that. I would have loved to see you win either way if you're empathetic here. You know, you want to see Rick Barnes and his family get one, but congrats to Purdue, man. It was they did it. They earned it.
Let's look at some Edie free throw stats. He averages 11.5 FTAs a game. I'm an FTAs guys, but I have to respect the FTAs. So at 11.5, that's the most since Pistol Pete. He is now 20 free throws away from shooting 444 free throws this year. That would tie the NCAA record set by Frank Selby back in 1954. So historically, we're seeing someone go to the foul line at an all-time clip. And the reason it's happening is, like you said, he's probably getting fouled more than we even see. And he's also getting the benefit of the doubt because he is the best player on the court and he is the Wooden Award winner, the reigning Wooden Award winner, and he might win it again. He might be back-to-back. Most people suspect he will be. So there is some sort of respect that is built in there. But let's be honest, at the end of this game, the block on Connect, that was the unfortunately that's game moment. I mean, it was kind of already slipping at that point, but that was an ED catharsis moment where he's like, get this guy out of here. I need this gnat out of my face. I need to move on. Yeah.
I don't know what Connect was thinking on that. That was just, you know, it was like UT had success. Like a lot of their success was on like no action, just kind of like no dribble threes, like from Connect, because they couldn't get anything going in this game. 0.36 in the points per possession in the pick and roll in this game. Like nothing was going. Like Ziegler couldn't throw it in the ocean in the middle of the floor. I'm being serious. UTU is lucky they were in the game. Like this could have been a whole lot worse if not for that wild Connect output. And, you know, the points count. They're legit. They're valid. But, you know, Purdue did a really good job of forcing them to take certain types of shots in this game.
Yeah, Zach Edey, career high 40 points. Best time to do that in the Elite Eight game. I mean, this is a guy who lost to a 16 seed last year and got a lot of blame, even though he played a great game in that game. I mean, at least by the numbers. So 40 points, career high in this game, 16 rebounds. First Final Four for Purdue since 1980. Joe Barry Carroll, the number one pick there that year in the NBA draft, and a 7-footer himself that a lot of people in Purdue land love to see it. So they love to see the symmetry of 2 7-footers taking them to the promised land. He is now the first player to lead Division One in scoring and make the Final Four since Big O Oscar Robertson in 1960. But the real story to me was after the game, and it was two sides of the coin here. The first side of the coin, Zach Edey, great moments, great memeable moments. He cuts down the net without a ladder, which was great. That's like a snapshot moment that might define this tournament if Purdue goes to win it all. He then takes the net that he cuts down and hands it to Gene Cady, who never made a Final Four as a head coach. So that was a beautiful moment. But then they put a microphone in front of Zach Edey. And Zach Edey, I don't think people expected this because, you know, we don't really see much emotion kind of spill out of Zach Edey. In fact, he seems very reserved. He's kind of described as like very classy, like very well-mannered, these types of things. And Zach Edey got that microphone and you talked about catharsis, drops a heavy F-bomb talking about nobody knew what was in their heart. I say it's a message to the haters. He continued in the post-game press conference. He said, quote, there are so many coaches that looked over me at Tennessee. Rick Barnes is a great coach, but he looked over me. So Zach Edey was on a rampage after this performance. What did you think about his message to the haters? That was something else.
Somebody was in this man's ear. Like somebody was Mark Jackson.
I think Reddit
got to
him.
Somebody was just poking at him. Like, and it was just like a geyser. Somebody like hit the right spot and he just exploded. I sent that to you and I was like, whoa, I can't remember the last time I was that shocked by an F-bomb. It was something else, man. But I mean, he won the post game. I mean, I will say the cutting down thing, as impressive a display as that was, it was just high enough where he couldn't quite comfortably pull it off. You saw, but who am I to split hairs over that? And turning around and giving it to Katie was a cool gesture. Yeah, it was funny to see the person who's been kind of bullied a lot over the past and picked at a lot. It was fun to just see him kind of let loose a little bit on Maine. That was surprising, though. Yeah. I almost spit my drink out when I saw that.
I was worried that, and you know, we obviously have the Final Four to play, so we don't want to jump to conclusions. I was worried that it felt like they won the national championship, like the way that Edey responded a little bit, where it was like, let's slow the brakes a little bit. And even Purdue, they put out like redemption, you know, I mean, we're not quite,
we ain't
the
done.
Final Four. Yeah, we're not done yet. We're not
much
done
less
yet.
Much less the title, guys. We got to win. You know, the Final Four is kind of funny that we draw the line there. Like that's the one, like that's so much more important than an Elite Eight. You know what I mean? I feel like the chasm between 8 and 4 is the biggest in the whole field. People are just like, put such, and I think it's just the branding of the weekend that gives it that extra little like prestige. But go finish the job, Purdue. You know, I'd hate to see, you know, I'm sure they're going to be ready after the heartbreak they've gone through. But yeah, they were celebrating, man. It was a big deal.
I was happy for him, especially during Detroit. You could tell the crowd, they got, you know, they had a Purdue crowd there, and the Purdue crowd was a little bit quiet early, and then they, you know, finally got to soak in that moment. So kudos to them. I saw Robbie Hummel with Matt Painter kind of having that nice moment, and he was, you know, saying to Matt Painter, like, I'm just so glad you're our coach, you know, because Matt Painter is one of the best guys in the business. He's what we need in college basketball. I feel like every time there's like an issue in college basketball, court storming, perfect example of that this year, like Matt Painter always has a clip or a quote or like some sort of philosophy that, you know, we can all argue our own, opinions on things, but like he kind of has the right answer for lack of, not everybody has the right answers. And Matt Painter is one of the guys that does. So happy for him. Also happy for Fletcher Lawyer. He took a chair home with him because he wanted to remember this. So I thought that was a nice moment. Shout out to Foster Lawyer, great college basketball player as well.
Who sold the contact better, Rylan Griffin or Fletcher Lawyer? Because they were kind of similar. Ziegler kind of barely touched him. Who do you think deserves the Olivier Award between those two, Tate?
Let's give it to Lawyer. Okay. You know, like as Purdue's getting all the ref commentary, let's just let him have it all. And if I'm a Purdue fan, I'm using DJ Horn's energy and I'm giving the bird back to everybody. I could care less. We're in the Final Four for the first time since 1980. A lot of people haven't seen Purdue in the Final Four in their lifetime. They've had to listen to IU fans for so long talk about do it in March, make a run, and then you can talk to us, five banners, yada, yada, yada. So they're far from getting that banner, that first banner, not counting the Helms titles that they have. But they are there. They will be there in Phoenix. The last game, we have the Tobacco Road Showdown. This was one that I was very excited about. Just kidding. It was something that it took a lot for me to stomach. to watch this game, but we did our best to make it happen. And all things considered, I think this turned into the best case scenario for all parties involved, for college basketball, for a struggling North Carolina fan like myself. And this was a DJ Burns story, right? I mean, this was a Cinderella story that played out in real time. They beat Duke again. This felt impossible. Bill Simmons reached out to us. He's like, should I hedge my Duke bet? Should I
didn't
believe
say
in NC State?
I didn't say anything. I was staying out of that. I was letting you. I was like, that's your call, Tate.
Yeah, now he's mad at me because I was like, Duke's going to win. There's zero chance that this goes any other way. And that just goes back to the magic of this NC State run. I mean, they have been on something that we've never seen. I've never seen in my lifetime. First time I've ever seen NC State play in the Final Four is this year in real time in 2024. So shout out to the Wolfpack. And let's start with DJ Burns because he was the star of this game.
Yeah, they didn't have anything for him. I think that's the simplest way to put this. You know, you'd seen kind of teams bring help, and NC State was just like gladly playing through him, throwing it in there, and it's been like it was sort of the equivalent of like, where do you start your offense? Like just from the top of the key, or they just threw it in there. They were like, we might score from here. We're not worried about it. We'll just throw it out. And in this game, they were single covering him, and he just ate them alive. I mean, he had won. I tweeted this. He had won in the second half, and it's funny how it's always kind of the same thing. He gets you where he wants you to be. And the thing, too, is that Duke doesn't really have a true rim protector. Early in the game, I thought that they were doing a great job bringing, like, help defense, help side defense in the pick and roll specifically, that flying in there. Like, Mitchell had a few good plays. Sean Stewart in the second half turned into LeBron blocking balls off the backboard. He was
never seen him springy. Yeah.
I hadn't seen him quite spring quite like that before. Yeah, he had he drank MJ's secret stuff or something. But they were just... they did a great job turning him over. They got out. Diarra had some good defensive moments early in the half, but Burns in particular, I was a little offended by Raftery saying that people are, you know, present tense or future tense going to fall in love. I was like, how dare you? Where did he rank on our characters list? He was high up there. He was.
Yeah, he was 25.
Way too low.
We didn't know how far he could go. You know what I mean? Like And I give credit to NC State fans, by the way, because they are long-suffering fans. And when they beat Duke, and then they beat Virginia, and then they get to the title game in the ACC tournament, they were already saying feels like 83. They have not seen a bracket. They have not been seeded. But they're already saying it feels like 83 for whatever reason. They could feel something in the air. I don't know what it is, but if you're a State fan, you obviously know what it is. They beat North Carolina. They win the ACC tournament. You would think, most would think, that was the end of this miracle run. Not so fast. And they just have just been incredible during this tournament. DJ Horn, DJ Burns, Ben Middlebrooks with Danny Cannell in the crowd with a shirt that says Ben Middlebrooks' uncle on it. They have created all these characters, and they're kind of just like a lovable bunch. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. It feels like the Replacements or something, where you're just like, I love this ragtag group. And how could you not love them? I mean, DJ Burns obviously being the face of that.
Yeah, shouts to Joel Justice. He leaves Kentucky, right. Gets run out of town, basically, as the scapegoat for things that were going wrong, falsely and wrongly, I will say, and as we've seen. And then he goes to NC State, goes to a Final Four. So shouts to him for that. That was fun to see. You know, Kevin Keats on the hot seat, I guess, supposedly, and he goes and performs. This, at the very minimum, Tate, I mean, I would say this is Survive in Advance Redux. I mean, directed by, who are they going to get for this one? Jason Hare, maybe? I don't know. We'll see. But throughout this game,
my guy,
they look tough, man. They sustained. I honestly leaned, I think I said on our show, I leaned Duke because of the way Duke had been defending. They just looked better. They looked a little more cohesive in the half court. But I just felt like NC State weaponized a lot of the things that could go wrong for them. You know, Proctor couldn't throw it in the ocean. Roach had moments where he like over pursued his own offense. Filipowski had some nice moments, but like I said, they got the better of him in some situations around the rim and had some success. O'Connell hit some big shots. That one, mm-hmm. and I think it was in the second half. I think that was the, unfortunately, that's game that put them up 12, I think it was. Was that what it was? I think it was in the second half.
He hit that
three. Yep. Lead got as big as 14, at the 421 mark. And that was just, Burns had one lefty hook on the baseline, dude, that I like scared the whole house. I started laughing. It was so nasty. It was just like some old dude at the park throwing up crazy hook shots. And you love to see it. You love to see it.
It started to turn in this game for me, and I don't want to put it on him because he did come on the show and he was a very nice kid. But Filipowski flexed to give Duke a 38-36 lead. And at that point, you know, State had been kind of, they had been behind and they were kind of clawing back into this game. Filipowski gets this, he gets the and one, he flexes. But then Middlebrooks draws a charge on Filipowski, and then he picks up a fourth foul on Filipowski with 9:49 to play. Ben Middlebrooks versus Filipowski was the game within the game to me. Like, that was when, for whatever reason, Middlebrooks is a little bit out of it. But once he took like the personal charge of like, I'm going to get Kyle Filipowski rattled after he flexed on me, that was when things started to turn the other way in State's favor. So I wanted to give him his kudos.
NC State didn't lay down at that point. And I think that's a mental fortitude that's important. Yeah, you're right. It was at 12:41 in the second half. And then after that, NC State basically went on, God, yeah, it was a big run to push it to 14, like we were talking about. And they just held on the rest of the way. You just saw Duke kind of mentally fall apart. So, the problem with the rim protector was tough whenever you get a crafty score like Burns. Maybe I should have maybe anticipated that a little more. But they just look poised throughout. Had a great game.
There were some great calls to Ian Eagle saying DJ Burns is a cheat code. DJ Burns had like this drop step into a floater late in this game. Like every single time where, you know, under the 5 minute mark, which State, by the way, 22-0 when they're up at the 5 minute mark. So that's a nice nugget to have once we get to the Final Four game, if they do have a lead going into the 5 minutes there. But it just felt like every single time DJ Burns was there to get a bucket or to get to make the pass that they needed late in this game. And the cutaways to DJ Burns' dad, they were great. Raftery at one point said passing is a contagious thing. And then Grant Hill said you pass on the check all the time. There was just some great, like Grant Hill's mad because Duke is losing in real time. He's like taking shots at Raft. you got DJ Burns, like the most affable big man we've ever seen, with, you know, just this smooth kind of way about himself with incredible touch. It was poetic. It was beautiful to see.
I wanted to say too, one of my favorite parts about the game was I need to compile this and go back through the video, but I think almost, I hate overusing this word because people do, but I think almost literally every trip after he scored, DJ just shook his head. He his shaking head per 36 was really, really high in this game. Like he was just like, not happening, man. It's not happening. His confidence never wavered, man.
It was great. I thought that Duke would be, or that State would be shook by seeing Duke out there. That was like a team that they had just beat. You don't want to see a team like that, especially during your magical run. You don't want to see a team twice. And the feels like 83 felt like Houston was the team that was supposed to be there. So kudos to them for cutting through. Kevin Keats got a terrible technical foul called on him for being outside of the coach's box. That was a moment where it felt like the momentum maybe would have been flipped. But luckily for NC State fans out there, there was a kid in the crowd that flipped the bird. And he made sure that the momentum did not flip. He flipped the bird at the officials. It was a nice beckon back to DJ Horn, flipping off the giving the double bird to the officials in the Wake Forest game back in January. So NC State giving the middle finger to everybody. Ben Middlebrooks is the face of it all. I feel like he's middle finger Middlebrooks, and they are making their way to the Final Four. It was some great stuff. Raftery said it was echoes of 1983, talking about the cardiac pack. Said Jimmy V is somewhere smiling. I think that is very true. And NC State fans, they don't get a lot that goes their way, especially when it comes to basketball in the last 40 years. So it just feels like a nice cathartic moment. As much as Purdue has this catharsis, NC State, they needed something to hang their hat on. And for young fans, this was great for them.
A lot of catharsis. And we'll see if UConn is out here ready to sort of smash the sort of narrative arc. We'll see how powerful the power of narrative is, or if UConn is like, no, the universe is cold and uncaring and unsympathetic and nihilistic, and they are coming to destroy the wonderful, not to get too bleak. I got a little bleak there. Sorry about that. But we'll see how powerful narrative is here. Powerful, Kyle, as banjos play with this Kentucky accent. Alabama, a lot of catharsis too. So it's sort of three out of four. Ain't bad when it comes to that. Well, we'll see how well it just comes down to who can stop UConn. I think, would you say that's the headline now as we go into the last weekend of the tournament?
That's the headline. Let's do a Final Four forecast quickly here. I think that is the headline. Can anyone stop Connecticut? Can anyone stop this dominating steamroller that we have all been watching, grace our screens? It feels like the only way you can beat UConn is if you're a ranked team and they play you on the road. And that is not going to happen in the NCAA tournament. So you can just throw that out. And we got a fun matchup because Danny Hurley has to fight the demons of Bobby Hurley, because Bobby Hurley is the one who gave Nate Oates a chance to coach. There is a little bit of that subtle storyline in this Alabama-Connecticut game. Bobby Hurley is who hired Nate Oates away into the college ranks, and that is who started this, trend towards the top that Nate Oates is on right now. So they obviously have familiarity with each other. They obviously have this high school coach history. They obviously have this chip on their shoulder kind of attitude and approach that they have to things. They're also great in-game coaches and great at scouting other opponents. So this matchup between Alabama and Connecticut, I think, is going to be great. And I know the personnel will be interesting. There will be great storylines with Grant Nelson, Donovan Klingon. Let's see what happens with the bigs there. Pringle will obviously be involved with that matchup as well. But first and foremost, when you see Alabama-Connecticut, what comes to mind?
I think Alabama's going to have their best offensive game of the year, I would say. As good as they played against UNC, I think it's going to have to be. Would you agree with that? I think it's going to have to be that kind of output, because we know, the baseline of what UConn is going to do offensively is going to be really steady and really high, because, Bama's been playing better lately, but I think the points in the paint for UConn are going to be so immense. I'll be interested to see how many threes UConn takes in this game, because they're not going to have to rely on it. For as much as everybody's three obsessed, the points in the paint for that, can Alabama bridge the gap between the steadiness of that by like spreading them out, attacking, clinging off the dribble, like the way putting Klingon, they're better at putting bigs in ball screen actions. I'm sort of drawing on the desk in front of me with my finger here, audio medium, but like they're better at that than like any other team in the tournaments in the field. So we'll see. That to me is the most interesting part of this matchup, and how patient is Sears against these, defensively. UConn has shut these scores down in this tournament. So those are the things that I'm really, really curious to see. What about you?
Yeah, I think Sears is the real storyline. If Sears can go off in this game, and he has a nice kind of control about where he is right now, he seems very comfortable in the chaos. Yeah, it seems like he's going to win the game. That was the funniest part of the Carolina game, as it was kind of wearing down. I'm looking at both sides and I'm like, Alabama looks like the blue blood right now. They look like the team that's supposed to be here, and they look like the team that expects to win this game. And Mark Sears has a lot to do with that. Same thing with Clemson late in that game. Every single time Clemson tried to make a run, Mark Sears was there to say, not so fast. So if he can have that sort of performance again against UConn, I think it makes it interesting. But like you said, they've been able to shut the water off, to use one of your terms that I like so much. They've been able to shut the water off when it comes to your star scorer, TJ Shannon, the latest example of that. So Mark Sears, we'll see if he can do something different. And if his mom has some sort of magic from the crowd where she can get him going, she has become a star in her own right. The second game, NC State Purdue. These schools, they have a lot in common. Let me just say, from the clientele that goes to the school, from what they had to deal with IU and UNC being right next to them in the same state and having to deal with their fans, to being like agriculture technical schools, there's a lot to like.
I thought Purdue was, they're not as academically like condescended to. I thought that was like a great engineering school, right? Or is it just that IU is
NC State has a great engineering school. They really do. Yeah. Like it's actually maybe disrespected because you got the Duke and Carolina people are kind of telling their own narrative, but NC State's a good school, you know, especially if you're going engineering or, you know, architecture or anything like that. So that they this have is, similarities in their the schooling. Best.
Social breakout we could do is where you and I break down the academic integrity. Let's get some professors right. on. Let's talk yeah. about endowments. Let's talk about research. Let's do it. Yeah. These two, it's a little different, I guess. Maybe it's not. I think you're right. It's both of these teams are starved. These fan bases are starved. Purdue has a little more, you know, I feel like NC State is still pretty playing.
They're playing with house money.
Yeah, they're loose. They're very loose. I was shocked at how loose they were in this game. Like, just unbothered, really. And we'll see how much of that lasts. I'm curious to see how much talk about shutting the water off. If you can look for the place where the most, like, if there's sort of like a tree that, you know, whatever they're called, the tree where things branch down to see if you can shut that off, like the most offense runs through Burns. How effective they are at being able to do that. And will Burns' craft work against Edie? Because I think they'll be able to single cover him because I think Edie just has to keep his arms up. So I'm curious to see that.
I am too. I think this is going to be a fascinating matchup. I tweeted on March 16th that I wanted to see DJ Burns versus Zach Edey. I thought it was going to be an 8-9 versus number one seed. I did not suspect it would be in the Final Four. So I am very excited to see what it looks like. We love a battle of the bigs. And if you look at these four teams in the Final Four, there is a big that you mentioned this with Mike Woodson. I mean, there is a big that you can point to as a catalyst for why we're here. You know, whether it's Donovan Klingon, Kling Kong, whether it's Zach Edey, who's going to be the National Player of the Year, whether it's DJ Burns, who has become the face of this March Madness run, or, you know, if it's Grant Nelson. I mean, if you're a Carolina fan, you think of Alabama, you think of that mustache, and you think of the Dakota Durant. So there is a big to be talked about in every one of these games. The first battle of the bigs will be DJ Burns versus Zach Edey. And I do think it is really cool that no matter what in the national championship game, we're going to see two good bigs go up against each other. And I think that's good for the sport. And this is going to be a really fun game. I think DJ Burns' conditioning in this game will be tested a little bit. I hope NC State can play in the half court. I hope they don't have turnovers that cost them in this game. But if they play loose and Purdue plays a little bit tight because they're on the stage and they're playing in a football arena and we're talking about depth perception and the other guys aren't hitting threes, there's a world in which I could see the Cinderella story continuing for NC State.
That's a really good point. The domes, right. Circular. I like how you did that. We came all the way back to where we started. I love that we weren't in the domes. We're going to be in the domes. I wonder how the dome factor. I think we should dive into that more if we get a chance.
The dome factor is something that we will be talking about. One last thing I did want to hit here. The discourse has had a lot of conversation. There have been a lot of conversations when it comes to the college basketball tournaments that are going on, both the men's and the women's. And it seems like there is an either or discourse that is happening right now. And I just want to say we're a both situation here. I am watching both tournaments. I love that basketball is always on. They're not really, other than NC State fans who have had to watch their women's and men's team play at the same time, so I feel bad for them. Pretty much you can watch all of it and soak it in. So it is great basketball. I'm having a lot of fun. It is the best time of the year. You and I are going to be in Phoenix. Any last thoughts, Kyle Mann, before we get out of here?
I think you covered it. Yeah, I'm jacked and pumped, ready to go to Phoenix.
KOC is going to be in Phoenix as well. Speaking of guys that are jacked and pumped. So we're going to have a good crew there. Kyle Crichton, obviously there as well. Very excited to be covering the Final Four. Excited to have you there for the Final Four. Do these shows in person. We're going to have some good times in Phoenix. And anyone that is out there, reach out to us. I know I'm going to have some NC State friends that are flying out, some family as well. So I'm excited about that, to have the NC State faithful in the building. I think Purdue fans are not ready for what they're about to see in that crowd. So it's going to be a lot of fun. We appreciate everybody tuning into One Shining Podcast, and we will be back later this week. We'll see you then. Thanks again to our friends at FanDuel. Must be 21 or older and present in select states. FanDuel is offering online sports wagering in Kansas under an agreement with Kansas Star Casino, LLC. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER or visit FanDuel.com/RG in Colorado, Iowa, Kentucky, North Carolina, Michigan, New Jersey, Ohio, Pennsylvania, Illinois, Tennessee, Vermont, and Virginia. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP or text NEXTSTEP to 53342 in Arizona. 1-888-789-7777 or visit ccpg.org/chat in Connecticut, 1-800-9-WITH-IT in Indiana, 1-800-522-4700 or visit ksgamblinghelp.com in Kansas, 1-877-770-STOP in Louisiana, visit mdgamblinghelp.org in Maryland, visit 1-800-GAMBLER.net in West Virginia, or call 1-800-522-4700 in Wyoming. Hope is here. Visit gamblinghelplinema.org or call 800-327-5050 for 24/7 support in Massachusetts or call 1-877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY in New York.
This episode is brought to you by State Farm. You might say all kinds of stuff when things go wrong, but these are the words you really need to remember. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there. They've got options to fit your unique insurance needs, meaning you can talk to your agent to choose the coverage you need, have coverage options to protect the things you value most, file a claim right on the State Farm mobile app, and even reach a real person when you need to talk to someone. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.